Senate from the Law and Procedures Committee, Wednesday, May 5th, 1971, 2 p.m. and 2:15 in the Capitol. Today's agenda, Senate Bills 297, 717, and 718, House Bills 1420, 1654.
In Eugene last week and specifically considered the matter of Senate Bill 297. The bill, of course, would permit a form of citation which would be essentially interchangeable between traffic, marine, fishing game, and by virtue of another provision of another bill, it could have passed litter as well. And the thinking of the committee that I can report at this point is that they would have no objection to this bill whatsoever, but would make two very modest suggestions in terms of minor changes. The changes would appear first on page 4. Line 27, the two changes occur on that line, and the change would be that the word designed be deleted, and further down that line, the word purposes be amended to read offenses, so that the section would then, or the language to be added to, by virtue of 297 would be, however, this section does not prohibit the use of a uniform citation for other offenses in addition to traffic offense and so forth. The same change would then be made in the corresponding portions of the other sections that are being amended. Page 7, line 16, would have that same parallel change. Page 9, line 29, would have that same change. I should indicate to the committee that the thinking of the Minor Court Rule Committee is that since the predominant volume of citations would be in the traffic area, and because of the fact that the traffic citation form has received very broad acceptance not only in Oregon but in other states, that that would form the basis of a uniform citation which would be used for these other offenses as well. Basically, it would be, at least in terms of the recommendation that would come out of Minor Court Rules and Supreme Court, that it would be the traffic citation that would be the model, and that would be modified to accommodate sufficient space to take care of marine and fishing game offenses. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions?
Is this essentially what this letter is about to Mr. Auditor? Yes, you're for the Minor Court Rules Committee.
Yes. Senator, that's a March letter from Judge Bagley.
Yes.
Our committee met, and Judge Bagley, of course, was chairman last week, and I would have to say that the position of the committee now would supersede whatever
was out of date
was recommended earlier. Yeah.
Coming along your finance system.
Well, that's the way it was.
You present those in the form of recommendations for amendments?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
What's the amendment on the amendment?
For your own amendment, I don't
know. The same amendment in the future.
I don't
Senator Brown moves the amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried. Any other questions? Not? No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm here
My name's Douglas Melovan. I'm here on behalf of John Lee, Lane County District Attorney. Basically, we're here to support the bill, and I understand there are some, was some opposition up until the minor rules that committee met. We feel the bill will be of assistance not only to police officers in this state, but also to prosecutors as well as the court, because of the uniformity that it will create. And as all of us know, the uniform traffic citation has been successful. We do support the bill, and we do, however, agree that all these citations should be uniform throughout all police agencies, so that there'll be no confusion where perhaps one police agency would make their own form and another police agency would use another form. We feel that the form should be entirely uniform. Is there any questions?
Just to refresh my memory, now 1038 is going to the table, and this takes care of the whole thing. Is that correct?
I
mean, I'm just going through the mail here.
I am the temporary.
When you take the
stand,
you know. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Captain Martin?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Irving Larson. I'm captain of the Fish and Game Division of the State Police. I have actually nothing more to add. I concur with, the department concurs with the two previous speakers. We would favor this bill because we think it would be beneficial to the officers and not having to carry three different citation books. One that would serve the needs of in all instances, and we think it would be an improvement.
Thank you, Captain. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Captain Fishman of the State Police. House Bill 1038 incorporates several laws and places them respectively under the Uniform Traffic Citation and under the Uniform Game Citation. But the two areas that we're interested in would be the littering aspect, which at the present time cannot be used under any uniform citation. This takes a misdemeanor type citation to bring before the court, and the district attorney then must prepare a formal complaint. Formal typewritten complaint for this type of litter violation. There was a separate bill that was introduced to take care of littering offenses, but by placing under 1038 these areas on littering, which would take care of throwing debris upon the highway and on ocean beaches, depositing bottles and so forth on the highway, and polluting streams and lakes, which is handled more especially by our members assigned to Fish and Game Enforcement. So if this Bill 1038 was passed, and then the uniform citation was passed, then I think it would automatically be encompassed under the uniform citation and complaint. But I think 1038 first has to put the littering offenses so that the uniform citation can be used in that particular area. And I too am in favor of the one citation. I think it's quite obvious now we have four different citations that we carry around for different types of offenses. And this would incorporate all of them under one citation, with the exception of the citation complaint. Of course, the criminal citation is not a complaint, and that would still be used separately. Mr. O'Scanlan, you had something that you wanted to make a recommendation in one change in 1038, wasn't it?
We don't have
1038
Right.
That isn't in the...
But did that explain 1038, Mr. Chairman?
Any questions, Mr. Chairman?
No, Senator, because that this statute 484150 deals with track offenses only. Section 2 is the basic statute 488.220, which deals with voting offenses, and then section 3 of the bill is 496905, which is the green and fish offense statute. Each one of the three sets forth the basic content of the form of citation, and the amendment and the this bill would allow them to be interchangeable in effect.
Don, do you look at this proper wording?
297?
Yeah. I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'm Captain Bolton of the Salem City Police Department. I'm kind of here on a kind of a dual purpose. I represent the Chief Association, Law Enforcement League, Legislative Research Council, and the OPLA. We feel Bill 717, do we take each separate or together? We feel Senate Bill 717 would be a great advantageous to us because of the fact that presently complaints and warrants are oftentimes obtained in municipal courts for commitment within the city. And because of this, after it is obtained, is found at a later date that the person lives either outside or has left and is staying outside the city, which makes it, of course, if he wants unserviceable, which means then we must get the complaining witness to go to for district court, get it dismissed and get in the municipal court, go to district court and get a new complaint and obtain a court warrant from that district. This requires considerable time, of course, by the police officer as well as the complaining witness. It is quite troublesome to the courts to dismiss and write new commitments. I believe by passage of Bill 717 that it would do several things, as I have explained it, plus the fact to permit the police to do a better job and cost the taxpayers a lot less money in getting these various complaints. That's out. On Senate Bill 718, this bill has several parts to it that would be of great help to us. At the present time, of course, we here in Salem, and I'm sure this is true all over, will oftentimes be called upon by the county or state if they do not have a car available to go out and assist on accidents or incidents, whichever may happen. We go out there, we are somewhat of an isolation, so to speak, because we are not, in one sense, the word a police officer out there. We work there, It's questionable ground as to whether we're covered under our very types of coverage, such as workers' compensation, pensions, and so on and so forth. It would further aid tremendously in mutual aid if we're called upon, and I say we again, I'm talking police in general, called upon to assist another agency outside the city or outside the county, as well as the counties could move from county to county and do a good job. Many of the times the criminals are moving from one place to another, and the cases are involved in two or three different areas. By them working together, assist and no end. Again, Section 2 would put more police officers in the state that would be able to take action if they see, as it says here, these particular things happening, immediate danger of escape of a person, or the immediate danger to other persons or property. We feel that most bills are very advantageous to the cities and counties, and certainly urge the passage of both of them.
Any questions?
Is this authority
I'm wondering if that came from. I can't believe it's kind of
every police officer,
they have authority anywhere in the state. I believe that I read the bill. It has 2 points. Section 1 would be a mutual aid could be made in advance that this could be done, I suppose, at any time. Generally speaking, I think it's a clear question of request in general.
You have an agreement, right? You have an agreement with the county or the city
to bring your county. Right. And this then, if it was done on a overall year agreement or whatever it might be, this would extend any time. However, in general, I think the intent of it is here that if, for illustration, we find that something has happened here in the city and our investigation leads us to perhaps Yamhill County or some other county, there's our some other city. And turn contact the chief or the sheriff, whoever it may be in charge of that particular area, talk to them regarding it, and proceed on either working with their men or singly, whichever the situation may be.
Would this bill allow the sheriff of Wayne County, if he were thinking his family or a church of Portland, to arrest somebody for something, for a violation that he saw occur in Mount Hope County?
It limited it to the five major traffic offenses, and I believe, and as I read this bill, this would be a crime which is not considered like running a stop sign or something of this nature. If he was to bank robbery in progress or an assault and robbery or whatever it may be of this kind, you certainly could act in Section 2 yet.
What authority
would he have beyond the that of a private citizen? Is that the purpose of this bill? The purpose of this bill, he would then be operating as a police officer with all immunities and coverage of compensation, so on and so forth. Should he be injured or something while doing this arrest?
Any other
questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Terry Carton, do you want to comment on this
before we go to that? No, I think Ken Bowman laid them out about as well as I can, and Ed Scott, Sarah, she's going to take a shot at them too. So.
You
want to
give you
a
pull-up?
Just fine, nice, low profile. Mm-hmm.
Evelyn Ferris, municipal judge.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Evelyn Ferris, and I am sitting today as a municipal judge and have been one for 6 years. And for a long time, I think that one of the biggest impediments we've had in municipal clerk is the inability of the municipal clerk to issue a bench warrant which has any legal effect at all beyond their jurisdiction. In municipal court, we occasionally release people on their own recognizance rather than see the fellow perhaps stay away from work and get fired when he can't raise the money. We release them for a plea, continue the case for a plea, let them go on that basis. We sometimes order them to pay, and they are given time within which to pay. I'm talking about payment of a fine, and I'm talking about a fairly heavy fine that he would have for drunken disorderly or for anything looking to a minor or just orderly conduct, any of those things. And if the person does not show up in answer to the court order, either one, to have it paid by that time or to appear on a certain date for trial, all we can do is issue a bench warrant, and if he stays outside the jurisdiction of the city, there is nothing in the world we can do about it. And we have people who deliberately do this, not too many, thank goodness, but those who do are usually the people who want law and order in the face of everybody. And it's very vexing, and I think it's very bad for a total system of judicial structure, so to speak. But on Senate Bill 717, so I am in favor of both bills, but on Senate Bill 717, in order to accomplish this purpose, I think there needs to be an amendment made. And I would propose that on line 16, that the word duly issued be stricken on the basis that I assume no warrant would be issued unless it was duly issued, which seems maybe a little bit superfluous. And instead inserted a bench warrant or other warrant for the arrest of such person, and insert a period at the end of that to strike the rest of the sentence. Then read that such peace officer holds in his hands a bench warrant or other warrant for the arrest of such person. And on Senate Bill 718, to accomplish the same purpose on Section 2, line 13, I would propose putting a colon after the word state and then paren 1. So that would be statement parenthesis 1, whenever there is reasonable cause to believe, and so forth, changing the 1 and 2 to an A and B, and then insert subparagraph 2, which would then be pursuant to a bench warrant, so that it would then extend the authority of the peace officer to pick up either an arrest as a result of a crime or to pursuant to a bench warrant. And I think that these changes would accomplish everything that Captain Bowman would intend to accomplish, and which we certainly would wholeheartedly go along with, and also the problem of the judge, which is Senator Brown understands some of those problems, having been a municipal judge itself.
I
issue bench warrants all the time, but they can't be served outside the city limits is the problem, because my jurisdiction doesn't extend any further than the city limits, so therefore it has no legal efficacy at all. Our officers can't serve them outside the bench warrants, outside the city limits. The county officers won't serve one of our bench warrants, so there we sit with some bench warrants, and once in a while they forget to come to town and leave and get them, but the most flagrant ones just seem to think this is very funny, and they just sit there. Just to give you an illustration, I had a boy, this is a little bit different case, but I had a the officers picked up a boy for four different offenses. One was drunken disorderly, minor infraction, reckless driving. I've forgotten what the fourth one was, and he was 17 years of age. They could not keep him in jail because of the fact that he was a minor. They notified the juvenile court, and the juvenile court, I guess, has had it up to here with the fellow, and so they sent back and said, you take jurisdiction of this boy. So we set the date for trial. He was released, of course, on his own recognizance because he didn't have any money and he couldn't hold him.
Mm-hmm.
This, no. there is not, we always notify the court. And as a matter of fact, as a matter of custom, they always do remand to us with very few exceptions, but they don't know the person. But in any event, the time was set for trial and all foil sent it, and his attorney showed up, but he never showed up, and there was nothing we could do about it now. His attorney says that he thinks he's left the state of Sheriff still there, but even if he sat outside the county line, Isaac Smith, on two of the cases, he's furnishing liquor to a minor, and the reckless driving. I dismissed on those two under the mistaken belief that the officer could then go over and file a charge in the justice court, and the warrant would be servable in the county at least. If he'd come back in the county, and the justice court refused to issue it, the justice court turned to the district attorney. The district attorney refused to issue on the basis of the crime committed within the city, and it had gone so far that a plea had been entered and trial date set, and it had gone too far for him to attend it. So that was that. And those are very effective cases. So I think that passage of these would really be a step in the swift and law and order.
Are those amendments, if you would be that more? Sorry.
Thank you. You don't get anything else, man. Do you have any more bills?
No. And the hearing on 7/17/18, we go to Hospital 14/20. Give it time to find it.
This is a complicated bill. You heard the head of this
try.
I'm so
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Amos Reed, Associate Administrator of the Corrections Division. House Bill 1420 is being sponsored by us in order to make it possible to include Saturdays in this statute, which now speaks only to Sundays and holidays. The banks are closed on Saturdays, and we have to see that the men go out with some cash in hand, which means that in the institutions that we have someone handling this matter is not our regular cashier, and our other regular staff who have to process the man out of the institution, they're not available, so the officer today enters into the picture. It's a very cumbersome thing. Furthermore, a number of the significant agencies in the community, such as employment and social security, their staffs are not available to work with these men who are leaving the institution on Saturday. We estimate that some 600 persons were released in the calendar year of 70 by expiration of their sentences, 85 of them for Saturdays and 85 on Sundays, plus an additional 15 on holidays. So we're talking about roughly 185 one-day situations here. And this, the passage of this bill would not add any cost to the state.
Any questions,
Mr.
Reed?
You only pay Saturday?
This is what it amounts to. That's the sum total of it. Of course, we already have Sundays in and holidays. But it flows back now, and we're having to release them on Saturdays, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
yeah,
remember. Any other questions? Well, just kind of this is the procedure. You mentioned the employment officer. A man is released on Friday. What time of day did you get out on Friday?
Well, we would release him in the morning.
I see.
The idea being he might look to the employment office that day.
And our staff and others would make contact for him and help him out.
Yeah,
otherwise, it's a rather frightening thing for a man who has spent a long time in prison to go out and where he needs to make contacts and he needs funds and he needs all these other resources. To go out on Saturday is just not a good practice.
So in fact, you're really putting off Friday morning. That's
what we would plan to do. Yes.
Say Friday, you mean the
first
part of the day.
That's right.
Yeah, thank you. That's what I didn't understand.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. No one else here on 1420, other than the hearing on that hospital will turn hospital 1654.
A good combination from Yadel County. Yeah, my name is W.L. Meckers, and I'm the sheriff of Yadel County, and also represent the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. House Bill 1654 was devised by the Oregon Sheriff's Association, and Representative Meeker was good enough to introduce it as a House measure. We believe that there's a real need for this kind of legislation, qualifications for elected sheriffs. The first reason probably is a public desire for more competent trained police officers, and the President's Crime Commission has recommended this, and more training, and it would seem reasonable that sheriffs should have some background to prepare a little bit for the position. In recent years, the complexities of being a police officer plus leadership qualities, administrative abilities, have demonstrated the need for more qualified sheriffs. At present, some civil service boards and some administrators are requiring higher education before applications are even taken for officers. It would seem a little out of place to have a sheriff with practically no education trying to supervise people with much more training and education. Another problem is the fact that a person with no background in law enforcement can become a chief law enforcement officer of the county. The taxpayers really take a beating in paying an official for services that he does not and cannot perform. There have been sheriffs in the past who have been salesmen, morticians, grocers, farmers, and so forth. I don't wish to say that these people are not good people in their occupations, but they're not competent at the time they're elected to be a sheriff. We believe that in order to upgrade county personnel, as some sort of definite qualifications be set. Now, the state of California, by the way, is presently considering legislation that would allow only people holding a master's degree be allowed to hold the office of sheriff. We believe these qualifications would be a little bit strict, but House Bill 1654 is much more reasonable. We would like to have favorable consideration given to this bill. I might also say that the Oregon Law Enforcement Legislative and Research Committee has went also on record as approving this bill. Other than that, I don't have any further comments.
Has been pretty good made of the background of the sheriff throughout the state of prison county?
No, not a real study. I can, the ones I've enumerated here, in Jefferson County a few years ago, there was a mortician that was appointed to the position. It was a political type of thing. And there was a lot of conflict about that. Woody Jones over in Dallas was a grocer before he was appointed. Red Britton down in Klamath County was a farmer before he ran for the office, and it takes a long time to have these people knowledgeable enough to even supervise the office. It's a real problem. I think the taxpayer really gets sick, frankly. And the qualifications that's been set in House Bill 1554 is not so so hard as high as one California is trying to do, a master's degree. That would be rather unreasonable in Oregon, I would assume. But I think there should be some background for a person to be able to.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is a subject I've been interested in for a long time. One of them was higher pay for policemen, and the other was better qualifications. And there are several things about this. First place, it looks like a man could wouldn't have to graduate from high school. If he was, could have got a job as a policeman someplace for 4 years, he'd qualify. Wow, line 8.
That could be. Now, originally, when we designed the bill, we had this.
Post high school. It says or. So if a guy could get out of the fifth grade and got a job as a cop for 4 years, he wouldn't have to do any more than be a flagman at a railroad station, hardly qualify him. That's the thing.
That's very true. And we would be willing to go higher.
Well, name your own poison. I'm all for it. I want to. I mean it, Mr. Chairman. We want to support the strongest possible bill we can get out, and I don't think it's very darn strong.
It isn't. In fact, the House watered it down from what we had it originally.
In fact, I like that. If it's going to be a constitutional, I'd like to make it so it isn't elected. Because what are you going to do if you don't get a candidate? Who can appoint him?
Governor, probably. Or county court.
I don't know.
Can
the county court appoint him? I don't know what the potential of getting something passed is concerned, but I sure want to make it as strong as we can get away with. I don't think you got very much there.
We have the certification, which we think is
good.
And this does not eliminate the state policeman from running.
What do you have to do? What are the educational requirements to be certified, besides taking the course?
There is no educational requirement.
Just as really well enough to take it.
Well, as long as you can pass their standards for to be certified, in which there is no educational standards required.
But you have to be able to read.
Yes, I would imagine.
But I mean, that just about the size of it.
That's right.
Well, Mr. Chairman, is there any likelihood that the Sheriff's Association would care to offer some amendments to make this a little more rigid?
They'll gladly do it. We argued about this for days over this, and some of the people in the Senate thought that we were even too tough.
You mean in the House?
I mean in the House, excuse me.
What was the vote in the House?
This would change the Constitution to allow sheriffs to have qualifications. Now the legislature is not allowed to set qualifications. But this would be a constitutional amendment which would allow the legislature to do it. And that's being, the hearing's being held on that in about 15 minutes.
Well, if this bill is passed as it is,
and we could see how this would work, Mr. Chairman, and then maybe in later years come back and design a tougher qualification. But we'd have the ability then, the legislature would have the ability then to do it without going through the constitutional thing.
Oh, I wonder if I can figure it out.
Any other questions?
Well, Mr. Chairman, do I understand the witness to say that he thinks this is about the best he can do at this time?
Through the House. But if, Senator, if we get the House, the resolution number 42, if we get that passed, we can come back to the legislature anytime and have them change it if they so desire. But we also have to get the resolution, House Bill, or House Resolution 42, joint resolution. Otherwise, nothing could happen.
Have the Ur people ever discussed this, about having the sheriff's office not elected?
Have an appointee? Yes. Yeah, some agree, some disagree. Frankly, I don't agree. I feel that I don't think it should even be Republican or Democrat. I think it should be like the district attorneys and the judges. Nonpartisan, so that they, if they're doing a job, they don't have to be under anybody's thumb. And this can really happen in a funny position. You can, Multnomah County, I thoroughly disagree with that kind of a home charter.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much. Any other, anyone else wish to get the final 1654? I'm going to close the hearing on 1654.
To do the best I could with this deal. I don't know if there's any way of talking to Chairman St. Peter Fraser, where you have a sense of the strength of this. I don't know if you got it.
So, is this going to be the ordinary controller? Is it going to be the ordinary deputy?
Yeah, I agree, but that doesn't make it like this any better than the sheriff. It's just, you know, you read and write. And of course, I don't think there's very many people that have no qualifications to pass that to get certified by the academy.
Any other questions? Yeah, I think the qualifications and the quality of the deputy, since the advent of the police standards training has gone up appreciably, I think, and I. From what I've seen, I think they are making a real effort around the state to get the sheriff's offices to utilize that police standards and require their deputies to be certified. I think a lot of improvement is taking place. I think it's gradual for it, but I think a bigger problem is some of the smaller communities, some of the municipal.
Since they passed that course, they come to us higher than pay the boys. So, so thank you. We have trained a deputy in our county, or any county. We really had about as much as you get. And Grossman, who's a nice guy, when Polk County got elected, because he didn't know where Billy Clubson and the shotgun, And so he hired this deputy with all the training. And he then tell you how big an investment it is. Took it and pulled it out for another.
Well,
do
you want to take action on this?
Respect to 1535, the motion was to amend the captions. Well, I think we've got a little bit of a problem from the standpoint of the form of the bench warrant if we do it that way. I think the form that comes out of Justice Court is going to be captioned differently. And rather than include them in this section 137.060, what I did was draft section 2 and a section 3. Section 2, you just add section 3 to the statute dealing with enforcement of judgment in justice court. Subsection 1 of section 3 is language that's identical to the language that the bench warrant referred to in 137.060 relates to for the purposes of justice or of circuit or district court, and then provide under subsection 2 of the amended bill and section 3, the warrant shall be substantially in the form set forth in this section, so that it would be a justice court warrant, but as far as form, they could refer to this form. And there isn't anything in the justice court statutes now, but I think if the JP were looking for the legislation with respect to bench warrants, it would be more likely to look in 157 first anyway, rather than over here under section 137.060. So it would be my recommendation that we do it this way rather than just amending the caption in the bench warrant form.
What was that to talk about?
Well, crazy. We have already passed this bill out. And so this is a rather unusual reaction. Senator Brown is Senator Brown seems to be considered House Bill 1535, all fair say aye.
Aye.
These are the amendments that were proposed at a former hearing to this bill with respect, really they amount to exceptions to this 60-day limitation. Uh, subsection 2 of section 5 as amended, excludes periods under an extradition proceeding. If they've been diligent in the way that it's proceeded with the extradition, but the original 60-day period would not be extended more than one additional period of 60 days, unless the delay was caused by the defendant opposing the extradition.
May I have a copy of those?
Also, any reasonable delay resulting from a mental or competency hearing should not be included in the 60-day period. Or if a victim or witness is unable to testify because of injuries received at the time the alleged crime was committed, the court can order an extension not more than an additional 60 days, and then a second extension not more than 60 days with a ceiling on it of 180 days because of injuries or incapacity of either the victim or other witness. Then sub 5, any period in which he's not actually in custody. Section 6 is a proposal that further amendment that was recommended by Senator Cook. I think I've gotten the gist of what he wanted to do there, but it in effect says that a defendant who's in custody pending an appeal to circuit court from a judgment in municipal justice or district court, so have his appeal heard not more than 60 days after notice of appeal.
Do you think that describes the trial that is heard on appeal?
Well, I think so. And yeah, I shall have his appeal heard.
That would include the trial, which would be de novo in the circuit court.
That's whether it's a de novo or an appeal just on the record from the law.
What do your lawyers think about this?
It's workable? Looks to me like it's pretty reasonable amendment. Did you think of it?
Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name of the group that proposed these. They were from
Ad Hoc Committee.
Yeah, from Portland.
But the amendment came from the professor from Lewis Park. Park. Remember, I forgot who he was and I asked him.
That's right.
His name is Bill Newton.
That's right.
I move the amendment.
Attorney Cook moves the amendment to House Bill 1533 that is before us. The prisoner is on the list. And Bill Newton. First one, all in favor of the aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed.
I move the bill out due time.
Attorney Cook moves House Bill 1533 before us. Due time recommendation.
I just have one question. I just wondered, do we know exactly what Senator Turey thinks about this? Now, this is a man who's been through the mill for quite a while about the industry. Is this something he can support?
Well, I don't know why he can't.
This is time to get all the advice he can from and support the experience.
I would think Don probably knows enough about this as anyone. I don't think Tony Joe claims to be an expert in criminal law. Don probably knows enough about it as Tony does.
Is this really necessary, the bill?
Yeah.
I like the amendments if we're going to pass the bill, but I'm not sure.
I do too.
Yeah. I'm not sure that the bill be in it.
Well, I think it is, and particularly in light of, well, that's the appeal. Takes the possibility of 60-60 says that has the no bail during the lifting on deal.
Yeah, that one doesn't bother me. Your sex doesn't bother me.
I don't really see that there's anything wrong with it. I don't see how anyone, what it really does, you could look at it this way, it could be right in line with President Nixon's proposal of today on somehow making legal rights more available to the poor
what this is going to do is make a speedy trial available to those who, for one reason or another, can't make bail. And we don't have to do it for those that can make bail, and certainly nobody's going to stay in jail in order to speed up this trial. So I don't think we have to expect any abuse in that direction. I think it hits the problem. The problem is the people who, for whatever reason, can't get out on bail. They ought to have a speedy determination. Courts in Oregon are able to operate within these guidelines now, I think.
And you, based on the testimony you heard at the hearing that day, I would think Multnomah County would be the only county where this bill would cause any kind of problem as far as getting the trial. Those statistics were reasonably accurate. They were quoting, I think, their lag time between charging and trial is considerably greater.
I would like to pass this report on the
Well, I may vote against it before, but I don't mind it doing that.
Well, one of my questions is as a prosecuting attorney, is it always physically possible to get your case in shape, get your witnesses and everything, and do it in this length of time?
Well, that's what I mean. In Multnomah County, with their caseload up there, I think they're going to have some problems.
Well, I'm not thinking about the caseload. I'm thinking about just the only case you had.
Well, I mean, it's the only case you had, and there's no problem. It's a rare case. I know in Lane County, I imagine Marion County, it's a rare case that never comes to trial in 60 days. The most serious felony. As a matter of fact, as a prosecutor, the sooner you get to trial, the better off you are in most cases. But from the sheer volume of cases that Multnomah County has, I understand that they would have some difficulty, and they're going to have to do some weeding out of cases, I would imagine. That there will be cases not tried that are now being tried where guys are staying in jail longer than 60 days.
But a good thing to priority, that would be.
How many were there?
I would say in most cases, the defendant, I think, is the one that usually wants the time, anyhow, more than the state, and that's provided for. He can get more time than the state. And I don't think the state usually, and we exclude the non-bailable ones, that's not included anyhow, that's the murder.
Treason and murder.
Treason and murder. And most other cases,
well, I'd sure like to see this go out. I don't accept it. I don't know if I'm confident to make the decision.
Well, I was still taking the most, and I think I'm doing the answer and doing spending research before we come forward.
And if it's bad enough, they can get together to veto it, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the best of concerns.
That's the best of concerns for the amendment.
This is the Senate Criminal Law and Procedure Committee, Tuesday, May 11th, 1971, 1 p.m., Room 315, State Capitol. Today's agenda, a work session on all bills approved by the Traffic Safety Committee.
Yeah, I think that's correct. Second, Wally. 302. In your old book, there are no amendments, but the
Traffic Safety Committee agreed on the amendments. I think that's where it's
yeah. And this bill is to cut down the language. Don really ought to explain it. Cut out almost the words.
Well, yeah, the new section 1 in 302 reads, the city of this state may maintain a proceeding in a state court against a person who imposes a penalty of fine on persons provided by an ordinance or resolution. Shall be brought in a state court located in a county which the greater portion of the area within the city is located. And the original section of the bill put in section 2 remains the same. Subsection 1 of section 2 remains the same. Subsection 2 has been amended. To read the court will have final judgment of the judge on this report given to the district, but I've lost the district court. Then the remainder of 2 and sub 3 are stricken. The bill remains the same in respect to taking out subsection 4. Section 3 has been amended.
You want it?
The statutory reference is coming from 44250. The reference to subsection 3 of ORS 30.215 is taken out and substitutes the language of section 1 of this act. That's the standard of the amendments that were made in the section.
So just to refresh, and if you want to refresh, that this bill is introduced thinking that small towns, very small communities, wouldn't have to have a kangaroo court that could go to the district court to take their local matters, as they now can take traffic matters under state law. And then the question was about the financing of this, and this takes care of here. And we find now that it could very well be a very important matter, the city of Portland. What was that kind of bill? Do you remember that?
The one combining the courts? I don't really remember, but I know the one you're referring to.
It's quite possible they may have to have a charter amendment before they can really utilize that. And this would make them have to do by contract until they've done that if they can take that out.
Somebody make a motion?
I move we adopt the amendment.
Senator Kirk will move adopting the passage
of
the special committee amendment. Put a motion on the aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carry.
I move it out to pass as amended.
And the clerk will appeal to the floor to pass as amended. And the clerk will call the Ninth Circuit opinion
And you'll recall the testimony that Smitty heard talk a great deal about the Murphy versus Waterfront case. And the question was whether or not the councilman was Hitchcock applied as far as the immunity requirements that you have to have make such a statute constitutional. Well, at least the Ninth Circuit, very recently, held that Murphy versus Waterfront had overruled the councilman's case. And pertinent language in it that indicates that there appears to be no question but that a transaction statute affords protection the Sixth Amendment requires. Here we examine a different statute to determine whether it may be constitutional. Also, we find that it is. And they point out that here, in this case, the issue is one of compulsory testifying before a federal grand jury investigating possible violations of the laws of the United States after having received immunity under the federal statute. And further, court then points out that, and they're referring in this case to the Murphy case, and cite with approval holding there that at least is interpreted by the Ninth Circuit, that they don't believe that the immunized testimony must bar all prosecution for the quote transaction, but that any evidence, all you have to show is that it's free from any compulsion.
That's what I'm done with everything.
So I think that it's an important case. The latest one I know about since the Murphy Waterfront case was discussed at some length by Jason Anderson.
It does, as Senator Hart said, does it place them in double jeopardy then? They force them to testify that they were making them prosecuted on the basis of this testimony and some other part of the transaction.
Well, at least for the purposes of this kind of a this kind of an immunity, which is not the transactional immunity, for the purposes of the Fifth Amendment, of course, double jeopardy is a different question.
No, I don't really mean double jeopardy. I think what I really mean is the ability of another court or another agency of state government or of government or even a state government to prosecute them for some other alleged crime arising out of the same set of facts generally as arises here.
Well, the question is whether or not if you grant immunity in one jurisdiction, and in this case we're talking about in the criminal law report, it's a question of two different federal jurisdictions, really. But I think the rationale would apply the same, whether it's a one jurisdiction, a state jurisdiction, and a federal jurisdiction, or two different state jurisdictions. I think the argument would be the same as was used in this case. And that is that it is not unconstitutional within the purview of the Fifth Amendment to grant this kind of immunity, even though you may get immunity under one statute or in one jurisdiction, there may be a possibility to prosecute another one. The way I read this case is that they, as long as there is no compulsion in requiring the testimony, then it's constitutional.
Yeah, but if there's compulsion, if they are given immunity and then are compelled, you've got compulsion, haven't you?
Yeah, I think you can still have compulsion even with immunity. I don't think the case says that. No.
What kind of compulsion are they talking about?
think that they're talking about compulsion to incriminate yourself. You're being coerced to give testimony that could be used against you.
Of course, he's saying that the court has indicated that that could happen.
You still have to make a showing when you offer the evidence to say that say you grant immunity under one prosecution and require the witness to testify. I think that if later on in a subsequent prosecution, the burden would be on the government or the state to affirmatively show that there was no compulsion with respect to the original testimony. I think beyond that, wherever the case is, all they have to show. But I think they would have to show that. I don't have any question about that.
Well, isn't compulsion implicit? If you say that you, once given the immunity, you must testify, how could you have greater compulsion than that? I've done a really argument here in the sense that it just strikes me there is no greater compulsion than to say that unless you testify, we're going to put you in jail. Since we've given you the immunity, I can't imagine any greater compulsion. What in the world other kind of compulsion could there be?
Well, all I'm saying is that the testimony was that, and the way the Attorney General's office looked at this bill, was that the Murphy versus Waterman case upheld this kind of an immunity statute. And this case here, which looks at the Section 201A of the 1970 Organized Crime Control Act.
Chairman, I think if you refer, I was confused by what Haney compulsion meant, but that's a comment on the preceding footnote, the paragraph right above, that once the defendant demonstrates that he is testified under a state grant of immunity to matters related to the federal prosecution, the federal authorities have the burden of showing that their evidence is not tainted, that's the same word they use down there, is tainted by establishing that they had an independent legitimate source of excuse evidence. So from that, the editor states the court makes clear that any evidence used must be free of all taint of compulsion. Apparently what it means is that the, and I don't know why it said compulsion other than what they were talking about above. But I think that's what he's getting at.
They're incorporating in their own opinion their previous case. Well, the way I understand it, a transactional immunity would bar any kind, any use of evidence with respect to the particular transaction that the witness testified about. The use of immunity refers only to the limited protection that the testimony he is giving would not be used. In other words, it's kind of a fruit of the tree difference. A transactional immunity is a much broader type of immunity, almost a blanket kind of immunity. Well, this, no, I think House Bill 1004, let's see where it is. The witness shall not be prosecuted or subject for on account of any fact or act concerning which, in accordance with the law, he was required to prove evidence. I think that the Attorney General's office feels this is a transaction type immunity. I think that there was a disagreement, though. The ACLU looked at it as more of a use immunity rather than a transaction No, I haven't done any other research on this other than to consider the testimony on the cases that were to the committee before. That's why I thought this U.S. This Ninth Circuit opinion was pertinent, because I think that the Organized Crime Control Act is a limited, in other words, a youth type immunity, and it's approved by the Ninth Circuit, because they say immunity against the youth in a criminal prosecution is all that's required in order to make the statute withstand Fifth Amendment attack. I read it that they say there's no question but that a transactional immunity is good. But this is less than that, and they approve of it. So I think it's relevant to House Bill 1004, because whether you agree with the Attorney General's office or with the ACLU under this case, Stewart's case, either one would be constitutional.
Mr. Chairman, I move it to pass.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's going to be a pretty good check. I think Tony would have voted aye on the next one, too, if he'd been here. Yes. He told me the same thing as you walked out.
Can we take our traffic safety bills and if we take these a little bit out of order, I'd like to take Hospital 1485 first.
1485.
And we got the mock up and done it. I don't know whether.
No, but I remember what they are. So.
Do you have yours mocked up there, Betty?
Yes, yeah, I
think
so.
If you. Let me give you mine, because.
These are the Paulette Amendments.
What's the purpose of this bill?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, if it's all right, Dick, this is the one that's already passed the House on the mandatory jail sentence of 6 days. And a little poll I took around the committee and took on the floor, I didn't think it had a tremendous chance at one getting out of committee or two passing. And an amendment that Mr. Paulette suggested, I think, pulls the major objection, and I think will make the bill more palatable. It's a three-stage, now we're talking about drunk driving, and there are three stages now. Your first conviction, we put the two-day mandatory on it, but it's the same as the two-day mandatory under driving while suspended, which the judges choose to ignore. In other words, notwithstanding the fact that it's 2 days mandatory, there are very few people that go to jail under those two-day mandatory. The second step is that the next time you get convicted, it's a six-day sentence, which is basically what the bill is now at present time, but this only applies to the second conviction, and this is 6 days in the bucket, because no suspension, no parole, and no probation. So when we say 6 days, we mean 6 days in the bucket. And the third one, on the third offense, it's a 10-day mandatory sentence. This means that basically there'll be no change in the first conviction, but there will be jail time done on the second and third conviction. I think it's a reasonable bill, and I would imagine the House would concur, and I think this is the best we can do. So I'm...
Okay, well, it worked last time, we'll do it again. No, I think that's right. I think most everybody that I talked to that objected to the mandatory 6 days the first time was susceptible to this amendment.
The amendment reduces it to two?
Yeah, and makes it that flexible two that most courts choose to ignore.
No, what if they suspend?
Yeah.
What about it?
See, I've also amended down in line 22. I've amended that to include in there under paragraph B or C of subsection 2, there wouldn't be any probation nor suspension of that. So that would leave out paragraph A, which would take care of your first conviction, which would show that for a first conviction under 2 days, it could be suspended or there could be probation granted by the court.
What do you suspend? Do you suspend part of it? Is that how it's normally done?
Well, look at 4. 21-17 is due a year, and it's turning the bucket for 4 days, and then it suspends it.
I do it on 922. I gave you my time.
Oh, I can look on the amendment. Well, wait a minute. No, I can't either because it's on the bill. I think you raised this before, Betty, and I think you're right, Don. Couldn't we copy the words from 5, make it parallel to 5, and in effect it would read, no person, or some such thing, nor shall the execution of the sentence imposed be suspended until he has served, until such person has served at least 6 days. Of this sentence or something in that language.
Yeah.
I didn't, is that a normal, that they might give him 6 months and give him 30 days in jail and suspend the
probation? Wouldn't it be on probation possibly for less than 6 months?
Well,
is that the right word?
No, probation is after the fact. And, or parole, I'm sorry. Parole is after the fact.
If I had my brother, it would be if somebody goes to jail and then parole, and that's optional to judge, of course. But to give them that discretion, they keep swinging on the guy.
I don't, without having these in place, I can't figure out.
Here. Probably the best way to look at it.
That's the one I showed you this morning, but I missed the written part underneath the name on the bottom.
Well, now. 4 and 5, except for changing the paragraph references, just the way it came from the House. I assume that what they were thinking of was that since they were mandatory sentences, that the sentence would not exceed that.
Well, I think that
is all you
deserve. Yeah, but I think that is right. I think that we want to encourage the judge to throw the book at him, and he can't suspend any of it. I think that's all. He shouldn't be able to suspend more than 6 days, or can't suspend the first 6 days of it.
Well, of course, A and B he could suspend. If he could suspend under A, suspend under B. Is that what you're saying?
Well,
I don't see any real difference between the language in A and B.
No, I'm not
B,
against it.
B is the one, I don't know whether, I don't have in front of me. The second one talks about, or C, I guess, is what we're talking about.
A, B is the second conviction. C is the
right.
Third
conviction. All right. A, we don't need to worry about, because that's copyright out of the driving while suspended, and that means they can suspend and they can probate and they can parole. It's a,
no.
Says it's 2-day mandatory, but it really isn't.
And
now,
B isn't that the same?
Well, B, no, because you go down to underneath, look underneath, and you'll see what happens on paragraphs 4 and 5 in the bold space.
No, I'm.
And they apply not to A but to B and C, and that's the mandatory language.
D shall be eligible for parole until they serve at least 10 days to be sentenced, and no person. Well, so you've got two saying the same thing. You've got no person punishable under paragraph B of this section shall be eligible for parole until he has served at least 10 days of his sentence, and then you repeat no person punishable under paragraph C of subsection 2 of this section shall be eligible for parole until he serves at least 10 days of his sentence. So have you combined those two together into one now?
One could be 6 and one could be 10.
You see, what I did,
B is six.
Number, on line 25 would read, no person convicted under paragraph B of subsection 2 of this section shall be eligible for parole until he serves at least 6 days of his sentence.
Right.
And then I add, in line 26, after three of the new sentence, no person punishable under paragraph C shall be eligible until he serves at least 10 days. So, one being a second conviction, one being a third. So you have to serve at least 6 under paragraph C and under 10 days.
Well,
he's
in the federal court, all that's three. Well, of course, the suspension might be two, yeah.
Could a suspension be two? Could you call him back in on a suspension?
Yeah. And you suspend the execution of sentence.
But I suspend it?
Suspend it. Execution of sentence.
Well, then, Mr. Chairman, what we want to do is get as much flexibility to give the court the opportunity to use all the tools they can and try to make Christians out of these guys. Including us, I guess. And we thought that this language, if it's. Are you satisfied between Betty and Don? I mean, with.
No, I'd agree with Betty. I think Betty raised the point that we don't tend to cover our, at least I think it'd be wrong, and I think that John can't you just take that language, parallel language that you say on parole? You can't parole them for factor 6 or 10, can't we say something to the effect?
Yeah, we could say unless there's a condition of the suspension or probation that the person convicted serves.
Or maybe take that same language and well, maybe it would be appropriate, but it just seems until he has served at least 6 or 10 days, one on the other, hooked on of his sentence, hooked on after, nor shall the execution of the sentence imposed upon such person be suspended by the court until he has served at least 6 days of his sentence, or something like that.
Well, members of the committee, why don't you work that out between Wally and we're going to have to be out of this I want to have a regular meeting of this committee Friday morning. I think we're planning to sort of step on your toes and say we'll meet.
Are we meeting tomorrow?
Tomorrow at 3. And our desire is to get some bills on their way and all of them take some work. So if you'll do that, Don, you and Wally, we're on the line to do this. So take action on it now. Tomorrow at 3 and Friday at 8.
Could I've been scheduling a tax meeting Friday morning at 8. I'm the only one that has
only on.
I wonder if I could do this, could be excused, but would like to register my yes or no vote on anything on the rule and maybe give him.
Give him a list of what we're talking about.
Yeah, we're going to talk about, and your vote will be recorded.
What's your feeling on this matter here, that Betty and
well,
I think they're right, but I'd like to see it the way it is because I'm against the bill. I think if it's left this way, the judge could suspend. I don't believe in mandatory jail sentences. I think they're wrong. I think if you don't trust your judge, we elect judges. You ought to elect someone else. But, I was a judge once.
What about the second or third offense?
I think it's the same thing. I think it varies with individual circumstances.
Generally, those things never happen over the house.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll tell you, there's a cranky bunch downstairs from about 10 to 12 every day. Whew! That cranky, that's Betty's word, but boy, that's a perfect word. Mm-hmm.
Have you heard this before?
Yes.
Didn't we have one like it before and something else?
Well, I remember the venue there, actually.
Oh, yeah, this was a month of Sundays ago.
It was the ad I regarding age. Yeah, right. I think you raised it, Lord.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, why do I get blamed for these angles on? Yeah, I think I raised them, and I think Mr. Paulette has a comment, and I think one or two other people had a comment. Let me try to refresh my memory.
Was this to take care of the entire people?
No, it's just to take care of fairly young people who have been committed to the correctional division by adult courts, and they feel like Gilchrist and McLaren would be a more appropriate institution than OCI or San Francisco.
OCI is basically big over.
OCI is for males under 25 years of age to fall within certain categories of offenses.
Yeah. What is 18?
There is no lower age limit. That's my recollection. It's under 25 years.
Well, a juvenile is 18 as far as you can get it, as far as you can get it.
No, they can be committed to McLaren. Juvenile court jurisdiction ends at age 18.
Yeah.
But if they have acquired jurisdiction prior to age 18, it can extend to age 21. And McLaren and Hillcrest both in their enabling legislation are institutions established for people under the age of 21 years. But this is the cutoff age. That's why the
The
21 years was put in by amendments in the House because those two institutions presently are geared up to deal with people who are up to the age of 21 years.
No question.
No question.
Geared up by statute or?
By statute, yes.
Oh,
you see, the reference in this bill is subsection 2, ORS 137-124. Those are felony convictions.
Right, that's all felony convictions.
Right.
So every felon under 21.
Could be.
And because the age of the individual who practices it under this bill could assign those individuals who have been committed to the custody of practices to a human training school.
If I always felt the person should have the flexibility of treating the patient as strictly required, not to claim the emergency code, so this doesn't matter either.
Well, that's, of course, the primary thrust behind the bill, is that they occasionally get an 18 or 19-year-old youngster who has gone through adult court and been convicted of a felony, and is subject to the correction provision, and this individual is truly too immature to place in the adult institution without doing greater harm than is impossible to do, and if they could have the juvenile training school as a facility to just lift the child.
Right now,
not the child, the person.
67, we said that they could pull them back and forth between corrections and OCI and the state senate, didn't they?
up until that time, they were sent to the PAN or sent to Oregon State Correctional.
Now they're in Innocence.
You know, we get, and now they're assigned to corrections, and corrections decide which way they go.
There was an effort once made to enable children who had been committed to the juvenile court in the federal health system to transfer those to the adults.
That was in
67,
too.
The problem there, because
they seem not to conform to the Constitution. Yeah, we did that in 67, I think. Well, I have no objection to this, Mr. Chairman. If I were the one, I don't recall the one throwing a block in it.
I heard such that there was some comment about whether married or unmarried made a difference in there. And the reaction that I had and those to whom I talked from the Family Law and Juvenile Committee who sponsored the introduction of this bill was that we presently have young people at Hillcrest and parents who are married. And this wouldn't affect having married people committed, wouldn't make any change in the problems that they have in that regard.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just because Jenna came over here, got her hair fixed, come over here and came over here and looked so nice and pretty today, I think I'll move we do pass the floor.
Well, to put it on that, we haven't read the bill, then.
Very hard to move. I thought Bill 11, 25, I have to move
that. Good call roll. Thank you, Brown.
Aye.
Thank
you. Thank you.
Thank
you.
It's been a pleasure. I hope consumer protection goes as well.
Keep your fingers crossed. Yeah, whatever happens to us, consumer protection, we need you.
What if we miss you? Along with all the
other good things. Oh, I see. Are you going to come over and explain it to us?
It's being
heard in
the
criminal matter, I know. Oh, so we don't even get it. Oh, consumer affairs.
Doesn't that unmarried make life?
Oh, Jenna?
We were talking about 1485 yesterday, and I believe that there has been an amendment to
You should have a copy of the amended bill. And Senator Brown raised the question yesterday, which is a good point, about the restriction on extension. Now, under subsection, or under, subsection 4, the new language that I added since yesterday is unless as a condition, this is the end of the bottom of this page, the amendment, unless as a condition of such a vote, have you got this?
I've got 4D. Oh,
unless as a condition of such probation or suspension, the person convicted is required to serve not less than 6 days in prison. And that refers to paragraph B, which is the second offender. And then the other one might be located for any person punishable in paragraph C, the third or subsequent conviction. Be granted probation by the trial court, nor shall the execution of court sentence be extended by the court unless as a condition of such probation or suspension, the person should be required to serve not less than 10 days in prison. So this position with the rest of the bill and also takes care of the possibility that the court would be allowed to exercise probation. I think this is, and then the rest of the amendments are, as I prepared them originally, as a compromise approach to. Right, because originally, of course, the bill didn't draw any distinction between a first or a second offender. And the most important effect of these amendments is that for the first conviction, we change the imprisonment to 2 days, so we do not place any limitation upon the court's power to suspend the sentence. Whereas we do limit it with respect to paragraph B and C.
Do you think there's any question that it comes from all of these
Well, I think there may well be whether or not the legislature is usurping the judicial powers of the court.
This matter has never been raised in any place, has it? In the United States?
I have no
cases on it that I know of.
That's what I'm
saying. But it's brand new.
Is it that new?
Yeah.
So,
I think there's a case in Idaho now challenging the Constitution.
I didn't realize it just was that new.
But I just don't like it, Mr. Chairman. I think that we're encroaching. We have the separation of powers between the legislative, the executive, and the judiciary. And despite Dick's convictions and feelings about this matter, I don't think that we should stick our nose into the judicial functions. Now, in Senate Bill 40, we have the very thing. We've departed from this darn thing. Our whole concept and philosophy of Senate Bill 40 is absolutely contrary to this. Then, simply because someone wants something of this sort, why, I just don't think we should depart from it. It's too much of an encroachment upon the judicial discretion that the court should have. I just don't, if you find some other way to enforce it, renew your judges or do something else, but don't do something like this.
To me, as an uninitiated, trying to remove a judge to the political process because you don't like a decision, I don't think it leads to a good judiciary. Now, I want a responsible judiciary.
Well,
but I think it's our job to give them guidelines.
You're giving them guidelines. You're not giving them guidelines. You're telling them the minimum that they can do. You're not giving them guidelines. Two different people that come before a court are entirely different. And in these cases that will be tried, Tom Mahoney was right to a certain extent. In this case here, if you think that someone who has adequate counsel and is prominent is going to be found guilty, particularly if it's tried by a court, you're crazy. But the little working guy or someone that nobody cares about will, he's the fellow that you're going to be penalizing.
Second time around? Do you see any difference between the first time and the second time?
No, I don't. I think the principle is exactly the same.
There's a question that was raised point in constitutionality. As a lawyer, I think you should know.
Well, I'll raise the fiscal implications right after that, because that's those two simple. No, what's the constitutionality?
No, somebody mentioned whether or not Betty, I think, asked.
Unusual punishment?
If there was a. There's a.
Equal protection?
Yeah.
Legislative
division.
Well, where does it say. Are we assuming then the assumption to be unconstitutional? The assumption must be that there is an inherent right to probation, parole, and suspension.
I can't even tell you what the Idaho case is, whether it's on separation of powers, whether it's equal protection, or what it is. I don't know. All I know is that it's being challenged there in the court on the constitutional ground. I haven't read the case and haven't followed.
Well, you know, it's folly for me to say it's not unconstitutional. That's take weeks maybe to research that one. The only thing it violates would be, it certainly doesn't violate, the best of my cursory view, any prescription, any explicit statement. You have to read it into the violation of the separation of powers.
So when I was talking about the separation of powers, I was not talking about constitutionality. I was simply talking about the philosophy of the legislature.
Well, this all right, no, see, my comment to yours was about the little guy not getting it. You shook me off. You know, we started with a mandatory 6 days. Okay. Your argument, Tom Mahoney's argument, although I think it's perhaps accurate, speaks to a greater problem in our legal system than just this simple one. It speaks to money, it speaks to bail, it speaks to indigent defense, the whole bit. But I think, so I got off this point on the first time. The 2 days mandatory, but they're not really mandatory. You know, the judge can get around them. But the second time, I think that's a different breed of cat. And I think if you get some banker in who's now got up nailed for his second time, I don't really think he's in a much better chance level than the former bartender who's up for a second time. I can't.
Well, I just think from the standpoint of principle, that it doesn't make any difference whether it's the first, second, third, or fourth, or fifth time. I mean, it's the principle to which I'm addressing myself.
And that is the right of the legislature to interfere with inherent. I think we'd have to agree an inherent. If it's anything, it's inherent.
But I do know this.
Because if it's statutory, we can interfere with it all we want.
But I'm confident that we're trying to see, we're trying to reduce. And that was your basic desire, was to reduce the number of accidents on the highway, the fatalities, and so on and so forth. Well, I don't think you're necessarily going to accomplish that if you pass a law where those who go to jail, you're going to cause indignation more than anything else. Are the fellows who can't afford adequate counsel, those who aren't prominent, and so on.
Of course, the argument is now, Tony, that those guys aren't going to jail, but the little guy is.
Well,
and so if we pass a law saying everybody goes to jail,
you should find some other type of remedy then. Now, if you're critical of your judicial system, approach it in some other way.
Well, I am very critical of the judicial system, and we've had a variety of ways to approach it, not including withholding your salary. But I think
that this is a damn poor way of improving the judicial system by putting this type of a burden upon everyone else. It seems rather strange to me that you use this vehicle to correct the judicial system.
Well, what if there was proof that although the criminal code provides for up to 15 years for one of our new crimes, that no judge in the state, or maybe only one judge out of the 65 judges in the state, were even given jail sentences? Now, would you think we have a problem there? Now, I'm lightning, my analogy is weak because I haven't got the figures, but what I'm saying is that if all of a sudden nobody went to jail for rape, and nobody went to jail, sounding like Murchison, nobody went to jail for rape or burglary, then I think we have a problem with the judiciary. And that's what I think we have a problem with the judiciary on drunk driving. That's not to say nobody's going to jail tomorrow, but not many, according to the information we get.
Well, that isn't the way, I told Dick, I think, earlier, that isn't the way they're being treated in our area. They go to jail. So I think it's the judge that you're concerned about.
Betty, your question of constitutionality had to do with separation of powers, wasn't it? And Tony said that wasn't necessarily his point, and I just wanted to be sure.
Well, when I was talking about the legislative branch not encroaching upon the judiciary, I didn't have in mind particularly whether it's constitutional or not. It's just the the inherent pattern that we've always followed and try to keep.
So you don't worry about the constitutionality. It's just you don't like the philosophy of it.
Well, I'm not so certain as to the constitutionality. Don't put words in my mouth. I'm not satisfied with respect to constitutionality because that matter hasn't been tested. So that's number one. But the other thing, the second thing is that regardless of constitutionality, I don't like an intrusion of one branch upon another. And third is the result that I think will come about by reason of this.
Don't we have sentences that have to do with the murder that are somewhat mandatory? California,
I don't know.
The jury makes a separate decision on whether they should go life imprisonment or whether they should be hung or whatever they use wrong. That's mandatory, isn't it?
The jury makes that decision.
But it's mandatory. They have to be one or the other, don't they? I can't argue about what's mandatory and what's good and bad. I just know that what we're doing is not working well enough, and hopefully this will be another tool that if the judges know that everybody's going to use it, maybe they'll be a little more comfortable with it.
What about life sentences where there's no parole, the guy is convicted of? Of course, the judge doesn't have to give him life, does he?
For murder, under present law, that's the only thing to do is give him life.
Okay, and he can't parole him or suspend him or probate him?
No, not first degree murder.
So we've got it on first degree.
That's not unconstitutional.
Well, it hadn't been held unconstitutional, I don't know that right. I would imagine it's been challenged, but
I'm not aware of any cases that were kept to the constitutionality of it.
That's the risk they never get hung, right? That's the reason they didn't get out.
Well, maybe
if
you didn't
have done
the test,
it's not in the Supreme Court, it's in the court process you need to find out about.
The trouble is, though, protecting another state district, unless their constitution is the same as ours, isn't necessarily going to help around this thing.
Well, I recognize that each state is different on this thing, but I would certainly like to see this thing get to the floor. And I don't know if it fails. I think it ought to have some type of salutary effect in the way of public message or education to the bench. Victor Tia spoke to our subcommittee and some judges here one day. Unfortunately, there were only two judges there. I think that we, as legislators, we're going to have to do something to, I don't like to use the word shake up or stir up, but things have got to be better as far as now we're talking about traffic safety. And part of this is public education, but the courts are a part of the system. And I don't know how the legislature is going to be effective in this area. We were trying to give them more tools in the way of going to make them go to school or do this or that, serve on weekends or nights.
Well, I'll tell you one way to help it out more than this.
Like
is reduce their salary.
We had a bill like
or
that.
Or not increase, or refuse to increase them. They say, why? Because you haven't been sending anyone to jail. They have a lot more.
We had a bill like that in our committee, but to me that was so offensive that we never discussed it seriously, did we? I didn't have a guts to bring it up.
If you want to accomplish that, you will accomplish it through the judge's pocketbook and you'll get to where you are.
I understand the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court has that authority and didn't use it in Multnomah County. The Supreme Court was sitting on the fanny not getting out. And I haven't got the dope on that from Ed Bransfield, but some attorney from Portland that I talked to about this matter said this money deal did work. I mean, it's authority was used some years ago.
The Supreme Court, I don't see how they could have authority to affect the salary. The only thing they could do is if they're more than a certain amount of time in keeping up their docket, they have to sign an affidavit, I think, every month or periodically. Saying that they have no caseholder and so-and-so or something like that. And in that situation, the court has the right to hold up their salary. Is that right, Don? But that isn't what I'm talking about.
No, I know it's true, but
the way to mean to stop this, say no increase in judges' salary, period. Why? The question will be, because you don't put anyone in jail for drunken driving. in 2 years from now, you find a big difference.
Well, do you want to bring up the motion today?
Yeah, I'd like to bring up the vote.
All right, you can bring her up.
All right, I move that House Bill 1485 has amended. The recommended the vote that you pass recommendation. Do we have to vote the amendment first?
Yes. Or you adopt them in the subcommittee, and you want to adopt them up here?
Yeah, I don't think the amendment has been adopted by the committee.
Not by the full committee.
I added some
Yes.
Aye.
Aye.
No.
Aye. Motion failed. 1486.
Does it take four to get out? That's right, we got seven in here, don't we?
While we're talking about this, I just have a question with Tony. Senate Bill 54 is the .15 bill. It had the same penalties in here. Yeah, could we? Do you see any way that we can use make it against the law to be on the highway, driving a car with liquor at .15 without compulsory mandatory sentence and having any value? Now that we passed the .10,
yeah, you have a lot of value. I don't think that you could pass a law saying that .15 was a conclusive presumption. I think that would be clearly unconstitutional.
Right.
But I don't think there's anything to prevent you from saying that anyone driving with .15 or more is guilty of a crime.
That's what we had in mind.
But
we'll have to.
That's certainly, you wouldn't have to have mandatory sentences or anything in connection with that, and that would be a good thing.
That's why we split this thing, you see, when the bill came over to the House, and we split the three bills. We talked about the second one, and this other is the third.
And I have no objection to that.
Yeah, we have to amend 54 to peel off the mandatory.
And I think that'd be a good thing.
And would it be effective without any more teeth than what we have now?
Yeah, sure.
That's one
a lot of them today are getting away with that to have more than 0.15, simply because it's a indirect evidence, it's a presumption only.
Where's
Senate
Bill 54? That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, we're going to have to keep that. We'll have to get that minute again.
You don't want it discussed now?
No.
Well. Well, I certainly have made. Except we'd have to amend that. The only thing we need to do is amend out four, wouldn't we?
Don, delete section 4 and 55?
Well, let's see.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was looking at the wrong one. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Subsection 2.
I'm sorry. I was looking at
subsection 2 and 3. Yeah,
2 and 3
have to come out.
And 4 with 2, isn't it?
Well,
no,
it's 4 is weekend.
Yeah, that's all right.
Well, you have to take the.
Engrossed, it's quite ahead of it.
Yeah, this is an engrossed bill, not part of it. Subsection 2 and 3 of section 2 would have to.
Well, how about the language on line 12?
Well, not less than 6 days, not more than 1 year.
That would be like the driving while suspended.
The court's power to suspend the sentence.
Oh, that, yeah. I
that's like driving while suspended.
I see.
So we just read everything after line 15? Is that
well? No, well, delete paragraph 2 and 3. And I think 4 is still a pretty good idea. If the judge does give
up to 6 days, the court can permit the person to serve the sentence on the weekend. Maybe we ought to take it out, though. If he wants to give him 10 days, he can still serve it on the weekend.
Yeah. Judge Hall wrote a letter to that effect there, and he wondered if he'd limited the weekends to only 6 days. If he gave 12 days, could you have 5 weeks?
Only 6 months, yeah, 6 weekends. Let's take four out as well, 2, 3, and 4.
I think you should, because it's a longer sentence.
Yeah, and they have power now to
move Senate Bill 54 by deleting line 14 through 21. Heard the motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Do you want this to conform with, I guess you don't, with the misdemeanors in Senate Bill 40?
Well, I don't think it's the parity because we've already taken these kind of penalties into account in Senate Bill 40. As we say, it's outside the criminal code and it's plenty for it provided the statute to mark it down. I can put an amendment in there.
Why don't we just make a certain type of misdemeanor?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, we could. If we're satisfying this, A number of these statutes in the motor vehicle code provide for some fairly high fines. And of course, this bill is drafted provided for a $2,000 fine. Well, see, our Class A misdemeanor in Senate Bill 40, the top fine is $1,000. Class A misdemeanor is punishable by up to a year in county jail or $1,000 fine or both.
Now, this isn't the usual fine or. This says shall be punished upon conviction by imprisonment in the county or municipal jail for not less than 6 days and not more than 1 year. And then, and in addition thereto, there may be imposed a fine.
There's a confusion.
Well, couldn't we use the same, the language as we normally use?
I'll take it back and we'll clear it up and send it back out.
Or is it your position that by reason of the power to suspend?
Well, it just depends on how tough you wanted to make it. This was the way the bill was drafted by the Attorney General's office. And it's a tougher penalty than what you normally have, obviously, where you say jail or fine or both.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we say it's a Class A misdemeanor, then it's jail or fine or both under Senate Bill 40. And I personally think it ought to be that way. I think it could be jail or fine or both.
Mr. Chairman, I would move then that on line 12, that this bill, Senate Bill 54, be amended so it will read jail for not less than 6 days and not more than 1 year, or delete the balance of that, the words in addition, or a fine of $2,000, a fine of not more than $2,000, or both, so it would be the ordinary type of crime.
Mr. Chairman, while we're talking about that, we've rejected the mandatory jail sentence, no suspension, no parole, no probation. Is there any validity, and maybe we're making the job worse for the judges, of doing as we're doing here, and we'll go back to 1485 in a moment, and that is put in the recommended minimum, but not suspend or not prohibit suspension, probation, parole. Let me say it another way. In this new crime we're creating here, we're bringing in this winked at two-day mandatory. But it's been held it isn't a mandatory, even though it says it's a mandatory. The hope would be that we could encourage the judges to give 6 days, which they may suspend if they feel it's worthwhile. The question I ask, I wonder, are we hurting the judiciary or helping the judiciary by putting in 6 days? If they don't choose to follow it, then, well, I'm going in circles. There are three levels. One, the mandatory that is a mandatory, because we do away with the suspension and parole. Two, a mandatory that we say is mandatory, but we allow the court to walk away from it. And three, we don't say anything about mandatory. Now, this one, we don't have the votes to go the mandatory, if you will. So now we got the mandatory permissible in this one. Now, the question I'd ask is, if we leave it in here, should we not go back to the regular DUIL and put back in the mandatory 6, 10, or 2, 6, and 10, and just leave out the mandatory aspects and no suspension parole? Is that
amazing? I'm certain that I follow you. I think this is a new crime. There's going to be a lot of convictions in it. And I think what we should do is simply say, I think we should leave the language 6 days in here. I don't know what effect it's going to have, but it may make them think. So it'll provide that for a jail sentence of not less than 6 nor more than 1 year, or a fine of not more than $2,000, or both, and leave it there. Follow the traditional language. That's my motion.
Heard the motion?
Don't you agree?
That's fine. I agree.
Heard the motion? All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion is carried.
All right.
Yes.
Yeah, that's in addition.
The release of the line 14 to 21.
We have to have section 5 in, though, Wally. Do you include that?
No, yeah, I'd leave 5 in.
Oh, yeah, you have to.
Yes, the motion read 14 to line 21. Line 14 to 21. We have to.
As amended, right.
As amended. First call the roll.
Aye.
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 Should we go to 1486, Mr. Chairman? I wonder, excuse me, should we go to 1485 first, and I'll try again to say what I'm saying now. Wash from your mind the mandatory, and look at the looking at the one that Don has prepared for us, the Xerox copy. Going down as far as line 22, in other words, amending our present driving while under the influence to put in this permissible mandatory.
Well, I don't know what you mean by permissible mandatory.
Well, the mandatory where the legislature says it's mandatory, but the judges walk away from it, like driving while suspended. See, that's what we did just now in the crime of intoxication. We said we, the legislature, want you to give 6 days of jail, not less than 6 days of jail, not more than a year, or the fine, or both. Now, my question is, should we make this conform to what we just passed, which says we want you to give 2 days of jail or both?
Yeah, so that it would read that in this situation, in 1485, that the fine would be, that's for the first offense, I suppose.
Yeah.
The fine would be
2 days.
Not less than 2 days, no more than 1 year, or a fine of not more than $1,000 or both. That's what you're saying.
Could be.
That's all right.
Well, what I'm trying to do is get some consistency in our statutes, which we don't now have, and I don't...
Originally, we had the same penalty in both bills as far as the language about the community respect. And this would then...
Well, wait a minute. Now that we have the alternative, we're killing it. Let's just leave it.
We're doing the same thing.
Yeah, we're watering it even further. Let's just let it go beneath the waves.
1486.
Yes, please. Now, 1486, when it came to us, was an amplification on the empowerment bill that we passed some 4 years ago, I think. And it came from the House, and they had some difficulty with it. They thought they had the legal parts of it straightened out, and our subcommittee felt that maybe we ought to, instead of trying to make the empowerment work better, we ought to give another alternative to judgment, and that was to pick up the license plate as another alternative available to the court. And 1486, that's what that does here. I've got to see what it says that now.
This bill is in proper form. I'm sorry. Yeah, here you are.
That's just the thing. Yeah, the right bill is in front part of it. I'm not sure that
this is on page 2, on section 2, where the new language starts, a new paper starts in the middle of the page.
That's the new part of the federal law.
We had some amendments recommended to the subcommittee by Representative Roberts. Then the question came up with respect to impounding a vehicle that was not owned by the tenant. In other words, a vehicle that he had borrowed or been loaned to him, and protecting the rights of third parties. So I prepared some amendments to the amendment. And over on the left hand side of the new language on the white paper, subsection 3. Can you see that?
I don't have that.
It's the one right in front of it.
Subsection 3 on the left there.
All right, and so the language that we have here now is that the court may order that a motor vehicle of which the convicted person is not the owner be impounded or its registration suspended under this section only if the court is satisfied by clear and convincing evidence that the owner knew or had good reason to know that the convicted person did not have a valid operator's license and knowingly consented to the operation of the motor vehicle by the convicted person. With respect to holders of security interest under subsection 4, we amended that because the question came up, with respect to the point in time at which the security interest was executed. So this is further amended, and you'll see that it provides that the authority of the court, et cetera, to extend, shall be subject to the rights of a holder of a security interest under a security agreement executed before an arrest violation or at 4266, and the vehicle shall be released or its registration stored for the purposes of satisfying the security interest if, and then it goes on to set out what the security interest holder has to do with respect to satisfying the court that the vehicle should not be impounded or should be returned.
It's only one section, too. That's good. No, I think
what happens if traces out further what happens if they impound my car for drunken driving and I owe $300 to the bank on it? What happens?
Okay, then that bank's a security interest holder,
right,
and would fall under subsection 4, and the court then
could release the vehicle to the bank. If the request is made in writing to the court, and this would be before impoundment, that's under paragraph A, and then under paragraph B, if the vehicle is impounded already, then the security holder pays the expense incurred in removal and storage. Purpose obviously is to protect that third party who's really innocent person.
What happens in situations like this? Ken, Jernstedt owns a car. His son doesn't have a valid driver's license, doesn't have one. Jernstedt knows it. And the kid is arrested. What's 482?
Oh, 42.
Yeah, 482650. That's the driver's license.
All right. Is that the one? Mm-hmm. All right. So he knows that the boy's driver's license is either revoked or suspended. So, and he owes $800 on the car. So it's impounded. And the bank makes the request in writing because it's subject to security interest. And so the bank then pays to the state, not the state, but wherever they stored it, all the storage and removal charges. The bank now has the car. Jernstedt goes over to the bank and pays off his $800 and gets his car back. What have you accomplished in that particular, under those set of facts? If his son's driver's license is revoked or suspended, there is an alternate procedure here, one to impound and the other to surrender the plate.
Yeah.
If they surrender the plate, obviously he can't drive it. But under the impoundment portion of it, he could go ahead and the plate would still be on it. And he could go continue to drive it. That car would still be on the highway. Even more, say the plates weren't on it, what is to prevent him from making an application for additional license?
Why don't you
set
him up in the car?
Do you see what I'm getting at, Don?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I don't have a good answer. There are good answers.
Yeah, right.
The difficult thing about the husband and wife is to get the wife to say she knew that her husband's driver's license is to prove that.
Well, supposing that she admitted she knew it,
yeah,
still have a big problem.
Whether she knew it or not.
Well, under this bill, the judge could pick up the plate for so many days.
Well, supposing that they impounded instead.
Well, this is the reason we put this in, because the impoundment is an awful situation, and as many people pointed out, there have been consequences. The House wrestled over this. I didn't follow the House argument. But they didn't have this to pick up the plates in it. And we thought this was an alternative that would be less complicated and could achieve the same goal.
I think you'd have a better bill if you didn't have any impoundment feature at all. I don't see what it is.
Well, that's existing law. Now, we did change that just by this one part, don't we?
Well.
The thought was you wouldn't change the present impoundment.
I think you have.
Well, you see, yeah, 484.222 already provides for impoundment.
Yeah.
When the bill first started out, I mean, it was a very modest little amendment to it. And this was to get at, because originally 42.222 applied to impounding a car that was owned by the convicted person.
Yeah.
And then the original amendment said, and any motor vehicle which this person was operating at the time of arrest shall be ordered impounded. And then they got into the alternate method of picking up the plate. And when they were preparing the amendment for Representative Roberts' left the alternative method in there and then tried to get at the protection of the third person.
Well, the third persons are protected now. Aren't they under the our impoundment statute?
Not as clearly as the other ones do.
Well, they're protected. There is some confusion because the statute says of which the convicted person is the owner. Well, is he the owner if he just has, if he's the registered owner and not the legal owner? And this is one of the problems they got into when they got into this bill, I think. But what kind of an owner are you talking about?
Well, practical matter. Why don't you think? I know in my own case, if I had to go through all the trouble getting that thing out of the town, no matter how tough it was, but just going through that procedure, I'd be pretty cocky to make sure that my kid didn't drive that.
Why make a believer?
No, that's what I mean.
And if the kid has it himself, he's going to lose use of that car,
you bet,
for a certain length of time by just having a plate picked up.
I see what you're getting at, and I think it's a good thing, but I don't know, but what, maybe we're creating a mess.
But your point about the guy going back to the bank and getting his car back is
buying
good.
Old,
I don't know
back.
How you'd avoid that.
Yeah, but that's the trouble that I think we go through.
Yeah.
Well, but could he get license plates for that car when he bought it back?
Payment stuff.
Well, I don't know if any law says he couldn't.
Well,
here
says he can't.
We got a law that says that you do something wrong with your car and they go pick up all the plates on all your cars. So could you go get another car, and put your own hook?
I think you could for another car.
Well, I think motor vehicles, and didn't they have the subcommittee that they when they applied for new places, that they would not be issued new places, the suspension order was still in effect.
I think that's
but
true.
The suspension order would not be in effect, though. Yeah. You're talking now about the father or the husband's wife.
Well, I think that's true. That would be true. But in the case of the third party, this would be true of a rental service, too, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Of course, actually, a rental service is supposed not to rent a car unless they got a valid license. Is that what you're saying? You can't rent a motorcycle if you don't have a license.
Supposing that we, and maybe that's what you're trying to do, to amend the present impoundment statute so that it protects the security of the holder. You invite the question that I'm talking about when someone other than the actual owner is the driver. But do that and then have the suspension or picking up of the plate of that car so it couldn't be driven. I don't know.
The approval of the impoundment law is incidental to this subcommittee's goal. The bill came to us the other way around. We added on the pick up the plates we thought it was an added tool. We've got a law that's not working very well, but it is being used occasionally. And Joe Bellamy says hopefully it's being used more. We thought this added tool of picking up the plates is going to give the judges, the court, this versatility of these alternatives and trying some on other. They're trying this like we are, a lot of them. And this thought was a tool that did not now have that would ought to be effective.
Now, there's another aspect to this, maybe there isn't much to it, but I'll mention it. Here's a mother on welfare.
That's the daughter who went to the hospital, too.
18-year-old boy. She knows that his driver's license is revoked. We're assuming that. He drives that car. It's impounded, or the plates are lifted for 120 days. What's that mother going to do?
Is she Catholic or Protestant?
Either one. We have a...
Well, I have an answer. Where is she Catholic?
Well, I don't think it makes any difference. We'll think she's Jewish.
No? Okay.
But no, I'm just posing the problem. All right, now, in our other deals, we have where they can have an occupational license, but we wouldn't have that situation under this. Do we want to invite that type of hardship? And with that, I'll go along with whatever the committee wants to do.
Well, the court faces this every day.
You got a man. No, they don't face this every day. Not the question that I've just posed.
Aren't we talking about a guy who drives off the center? Isn't that?
No, what I'm talking about is the owner of that car who permits someone else to.
All right, but what I'm saying is that could not the welfare fellow go down and get an occupational license from his original charge? Whatever it was, drunk driving, or whatever, we don't repeal the law.
The welfare mother has committed no offense. She's not apprehended of driving the car at all. She's never been in it.
Yeah, there's a separate offense. No person shall drive an annoying or permit a motor vehicle owned by
her
under control.
All right.
But that's her offense.
All right, that's her offense. Now, she would have to be charged also.
All right, in other words, maybe I may not understand your question, Tony, but it seems to me that if the guy is under a suspension for some previous
and she allows him to drive it again. Then that's her tough luck, say I.
All right, well,
now, if he wants to get to go and get the occupational permit, he can. Let's say the first one was
due. I'm not talking about him. I'm talking
about her.
About her?
Well, of course, it's only his suspension that even brings her into the... If he is not suspended, she's committed no crime. And
the point that I'm making is she's the one that's being deprived of the use of that car for 120 days. Not him. We'll say that's the first time he's ever driven it.
Well, of course, if we make an exception for that, then we'd have to make an exception for the wife and for everybody else, and the only one you can impound is a car that isn't sole ownership.
Why don't we have Don look up those situations in which an occupation license can be obtained?
No, I don't think occupational license has anything to do with it. How does that have anything to do with it? I mean, so she could get it back?
So she could get it back to drive from home to work and back.
Well, I could drive to my job.
You see what I mean? So that she could have something to drive back.
Occupational respect
for
the power is for the owner.
That's exactly it.
Yeah, but you don't have now. He's convicted of a crime, suspends a license, fails to get a operational license, so therefore he would be driving while suspended. She loans the car to him, he gets arrested, the car is impounded. Now you want to take it a step further and say that she then can get it back under an
I'm just raising the question. Do you want her to be unable to get it back? Whereas if she had committed the offense, she could have. But because her son did, she can't get it back.
Okay. Of course, I don't know that he would get it back.
Or not?
Would he? Is that available to a guy who's charged with driving while suspended?
I don't know.
The
but that's immaterial.
So.
That's immaterial. I'm not concerned about him. I'm concerned about the owner, the father, or the husband, or the wife, whoever it is.
Well, if he knew that his life was suspended, then really, it's still out of standard. Now, he stole it.
Well, if what you want is, if she absolutely knew that that kid's driver's license is suspended, and she let him take the car to go to the grocery store, then you want her to be unable to drive for a period of 30 to 120 days under proof, back to work or not or whatever it is, well, then you're all right. But I'm just raising the question, do you want her to be in a position so that she, not this boy, she could drive it with certain restrictions in daylight hours, from her home to her job and back and so on.
This is you can take the situation up where my wife could decide I want some exercise and so she.
Of course, you see, when you once do this, Tony, then you make it possible to board and steal it or take it out again and again.
No. Or how is it?
Well, because the car's in the garage. And so the guy
can
get stuff
in. Make it for the first time then. Only the first occasion she can get it back. Not get it back.
I see your point. I think it's something to be concerned about. But I'm just afraid that they will water this down to the point where there isn't any.
Dick, I'm not trying to water it down.
No, I know you're not. I didn't mean to sound like that, but I mean we would water it down.
Well, you just have to make a decision whether to say even for the first time that occurs, whether you want her to be able to get that car for restricted purposes. The whole point is we've got a bucket of worms in a way, and we kind of push this one in and something else comes out.
Well, I think that's accurate. I agree. But I think it's true of all families.
Well, what's your wish?
Well, now wait a minute. The court could give her as little as 30 days, couldn't it?
It should be all right.
Well, let me ask this back the question. Is this a mandatory sentence?
Well, it isn't a sentence.
No, it's
still a sentence at all.
Not a sentence.
It's a penalty.
It's not a sentence.
Well,
what
happened?
The administrative.
You think the discussion is good?
No.
What if we drop the 30 and just set up to 120 days?
That'd be better.
What's your infrequent but possible example of the welfare mother and the whole bit? If he took pity on her, he could say, okay, 0 days.
Or one day,
or a week, or whatever the case may be. But if you do it again, little old lady, I'll do it 120 days for you.
You're talking about now to suspend up to 120 days, and then the second offense?
No, I think it's up to 120 days.
Yeah.
We're back to the old problem that Tony stated very well, and that is if the court wants to wink at this one, it's going to wink at this one, and the whole shebang here is going to be useless. But if they want to use this technique, I think the fact that putting the floor at 30 gives rise to the question you, I think, correctly raised. And I think by putting up to 120 days, if the gal comes in and cries all over the judge and he takes pity on her, he can give her 0 days.
And the thing is that he can judge each case on its own merits and its own facts.
Could he, in fact, give her a limited use of that car by a court order?
No.
Well, I don't think that. This occupational permit is a nuts anyway.
It is. You know, when you get into that, the occupational permit is, I'm not sure I understand
that. Yeah. Well, first of all, going to the grocery store is not an occupation.
I want the business to have more tools. Because they've got an excuse to being effective.
If it's been a hammer and tongs,
this Senator, you trade booze that we amend.
No, I don't. Senator Carson.
I move in two places.
Yeah, right.
Up on line of the ad, on line 6, and then again on the fifth, the fourth line of the paragraph
2. 120 days.
Okay. Well, to suspend, impounded for up to 120 days in judgment.
Up to, is that what we want?
Well, all right.
Not to exceed, yeah, not more than. Not
all right.
That's quality talk.
Well, it costs you a little more, Dick, to get the quality talk, so that's it.
I found that out. Yeah. And then we do the same thing about the...
You guys are getting into it. Not more than... Okay.
Come on in, Your Honor.
Heard the motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Now. I'm going to vote.
No! Come on, it's another one of those contraceptive girls before.
It is true.
It's not contraceptive, it's antiseptic.
We had Senator Brown here, she had to go to the rules, so we're operating on
there. And I'm going to go start with this call for a minute, and I'll be back. Do you want to kick this one out?
I'd like to.
Do we have any other changes on the picking up the plate?
Now, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to vote with you to get this bill out. But I think there's a bucket of worms on the impoundment and a lot of other things that we haven't settled, so I may not vote for.
Have we added to any added any worms to what was in the existing statute?
I vote aye.
Yeah, yes, you have.
On the impoundment?
You bet you have.
No.
You
make the motion to vote it out.
Yeah.
Senator Hart moves forward, you pass. First call of all, Senator Carson voted aye.
For limited purposes only. Aye.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have the privilege of having you have this in your pocket for a day.
All right. You bet.
Because, God help me, I don't want to make this thing any worse. I'll jump out that window first.
You've opened up a lot of areas in here when you try to protect the security.
But I'm not suggesting I can solve it.
Oh, you two guys,
take it around.
Okay.
I'll give you 2 days.
Okay.
All right, now what do you want?
Well, let's see here. There was 54. Of course, went out. Parks went out, going to kill. 1936, 1435, 1936. Impounded,
Judge Ellis had a bill that went into the House, 1783. Did we vote that out of full committee?
Nope.
1783. And it's a kind of a... I gave a my letter to Carson because it also had... Passed out of full committee without recommendation?
No, your
committee. Oh, I see.
Thank you.
I got a letter from Judge Ellis on this that explains this a little more clearly, but you lawyers will have to know about but under the Judge Ellis says that under the present statute that this thing only applies to speed and not any other type of problem, and the bill is written then reasonable control when he's driving to avoid the collision, and as a judge, he thought that this language covered something a lot better than just referring to speed.
Subsection 1, of course, is your ordinary DVR, which violates the basic rule, subsection 1. Subsection 2 under existing law.
Well, now, mine isn't marked that way.
Is it yours?
It's 1783?
Yeah, 1783.
Well, mine has section 1, it's the old basic rule, and then has section 2, which makes section 3 a part of this act. And then section 3, which has two subsections. Right?
Right.
Now, which one are you talking about, Donnie?
Well, I'm talking about, I just had the option to new stuff yet. I was just pointing out, I was going to point out how it varies and why it is the same. The original statute, of course, included an element of speed, and
right.
The purpose was to take that out of subsection 2 and just talk about control and sliding with another vehicle. So the speed did not
right.
Become but an element.
You mean section 2?
No.
Instead of subsection.
Well, it was subsection 2.
Oh, underneath.
No,
I
looked at it.
Okay, yeah. All right, now I follow you.
Okay, so what they did, they... The amended version would make it a separate statute rather than making it part of the DVR statute as the original bill did, and just removing the speed element. It would just create a new statute.
That looks all right to me.
Well, you just thought it would be helpful, and at first we didn't think it looked like much as well as all of us.
Is this another tool that you're...
No, this is, I'm sure the tool is not.
This is a good tool, though, really.
Well, this is just a substitute revision.
I know that traffic officers have traditionally had a great deal of difficulty with subsection 2 of the DVR law because of its speed. And I've seen cases where you had a collision and the officers now, many of them, think the law is as it appears in the amended version. In other words, they think the minute that you have a collision, you've got a violation of the basic rule. And but when it comes time to try it, then you'll see that the language in there shall drive at a speed which is greater than will permit him to exercise proper control. So you have to prove more than just a collision. You have to prove also the speed element as you do under subsection 2 of the DVR. Anyway, this seems to me as if we clarify the law.
I understand.
Well, what, if you don't mind, it's a little out of the ordinary, but I will take you guys' vote and ask the law.
Fine. He voted for the substitute.
Fine. Well, I'm going to take that into consideration. But I would, will you call the. You said the part of the 1783 out and you pass.
As amended.
As amended. First call the.
Do we adopt the amendments? Do we have to do that?
These are House amendments.
Are these all House amendments?
Yeah, these are House amendments.
Fine.
Chairman, I would suggest in the future, I would request that you have an agenda of the bills that are going to be considered for each member.
Right.
You can call them upon the Senator Hoyt for what you want. Now, because we'd have an opportunity then to look at
them. We're working on a few of our pants, Senator.
These are coming out of the substance.
We hope to have them the other day.
Well, I think we should give them some vaccine and have them. For it and studying one ahead, you know.
Right.
We're talking about them.
Right.
Aye.
Aye. And Carson votes
aye.
Aye.
Chairman, as far as we're concerned in your subcommittee, here is outside of any remedial work on the bills we were talking about, that the unsealed bottle bill is still in substitute. And we did introduce the bill, the committee introduced the bill. It had to do with pre-arrest breath test, which incidentally apparently has gone through the Supreme Court of Florida. But the bill hasn't come to this committee yet. And I don't know whether it's Senator Curry or Senator Burns has anything to do with that or not, because I don't think anyone would like it very
well. Well, I don't like it. If I were president, I wouldn't send it to this committee. I guarantee you that.
At least you know how he's going to vote. But of course, I knew that before I came in.
Yeah, I told you that.
Do you have recommendations on
paper? Well, I think at this point it's a little premature. There may be something come up we want a bill number.
610. How about 610?
I don't have it on my in my mind.
Well, 610 is really not much good. It relates to parking within the distance of an intersection.
Well, 610 is the one that we passed this out, and I'm not bringing it before the whole committee because the sponsors are not enforcing the law from Portland, and we said, well, set this back so far, and we said, no, we're not enforcing that part of it anyhow.
I'm moving the table.
I missed you then.
I'll have to collect another vote.
All right, collect
another
vote.
You can put it in the pot if you want, or we'll take care of it.
Do you want to talk about the 31, 1655, House Bill 1655?
You have an amended version of that you should have.
Oh, that's where Oxford.
You'd written it. Somebody wrote it over there. You just sent it card. Representative Meeker about this. He justified that in the subcommittee on this.
I think that's a good bill now, as amended.
You see the white, you got white seat there.
I think you got him posted in. Just said
it's on the white, yeah.
All right. And it should have a new section 3. Or a new section 2 and a section 3 with respect to charging a fee for reinstatement.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, this, we amended it. You see, the House had amended it to say refusal of letters also significant proof of receipt. Well, that doesn't really tell you, thank you very much.
What do you get by these like that? Even a dry cleaner doesn't like that.
The amendment now says, our amendment says refusal of the service by the person's license to write is standard prima facie evidence to receive a notice. It tells you a lot more.
That's quality document.
That's quality document. Then section 2 and 3, I drafted yesterday after Representative Meeker, he brought this question up at the subcommittee. The Motor Vehicle Department indicated that they don't charge any fees for this, and sometimes, particularly if they're trying to get notice on it, and they can have personal service upon the individual. It's a fairly expensive thing to do at times. So, this is just an arbitrary amount I put on there, $2. I don't have any basis for that. It's a good round figure.
I move the amendment.
Senator Hoyt moves the amendment. As to them, all favor say aye.
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 I move the bill out subject to the examination by the absent brothers.
Motion, Kurt, and call the roll.
That sounds like...
Hi, Pete.
That sounds like fraternity days, doesn't it, Tony? And,
yeah.
And the day.
There never was any absent when I was in school. Everybody's there.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. I'm not going to play them anymore.
If they can, may I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Has any action been taken in this committee on the House Bill 1443, that's the bottle law?
No,
I'm
talking
about.
Is
that the one you were talking about, Jim?
Yeah. 1443. Yeah, 1443.
Yes,
and that is
it? Well, the highway users conference that was meeting today, they recommended this passage.
How can I get the county court to put the give you a bill and send all over? Who can I give all this to me? I don't see it. I want to touch this again now on this. Have we passed something or have we got something like the whole thing before you have to limit this thing?
They've already been doing that. I said Bill 54, so they took that out.
I don't understand this. How Pete and Tony don't agree. There's a meter in the wood pile, it's hard to stretch it. But I'm from the top.
Well, I'm just carrying payoff from the highway.
Thanks, Dan.
You may get booted out of the community college club.
So that's all.
That's doing
The hospital is okay really well.